I love that the entire way through, he was just such an alien.
Yeah. Yeah. He was an alien ding dong.
That's exactly what he was.
I know.
I love that. I love an alien ding dong so much. It's my favorite kind of ding dong.
I'm Melody Carlisle.
And I'm Sabrina Bradley.
And this is Heaving Bosoms. This is the podcast where best friends recap romance novels and other kissing media that makes us swoon, snark, and refills our cups.
Whether you've read the book or are coming in blind, we'll lay bare every delicious scene and revel in the tropes and subgenres that make romance amazing.
All right, listener, strap in and strap on. Headphones are highly recommended.
All right, Sabrina, I've been lost. I don't live here anymore. This isn't my address. I fully live in the Ruthless Bosses series by Theodora Taylor. That's where I live now.
Oh, you went back.
I did. I went back hard. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. I'm still halfway through the Theodora Taylor that I started after his pretend baby. And because I wasn't enjoying it. I didn't even start reading something else. I think life was just to Mel's Cunt Punch Extravaganza.
Exactly.
And then you are back in.
I'm back in.
Let's fucking do it.
Okay, wait. So I'm going to tell you about them, I think, for Patreon. I think that'll be a really fun thing for me to tell you. Yeah, like a quickie I tell you about them.
I'm delighted.
In one episode. But right now, okay, so the thing that's wild and amazing about Theodora Taylor is that I feel but also I feel like Theodora Taylor is just like, I'm out here in the world, I'm doing my shit, I'm going to adhere to some conventions, and I'm going to change other conventions because, like, I'm that good. You know what I mean? And she's right. But one of those things is like the 50 states thing.
Yes.
It's an overarching thing for so many of her series.
I know. Because
it's wild.
Guess who started a spreadsheet about it?
Yeah, you did.
It's me.
Yeah, it's Sabrina.
I started a fucking personal spreadsheet because I'm going to read all of them.
Hell yeah.
Eventually. One day.
Yeah, right. And in this four set, okay, it's all contemporary, but one of them gets a little paranormal.
Really?
Yes. Wow. I will tell you about it. Let's just say she gets impregnated by a ghost. It's fine. It's fine. Or a spirit, I guess, is a better way to put it.
In this incredibly contemporary series.
Yeah.
It just... Okay. All right. No further questions.
It just has spirit fucking. Oh, it's so good. And okay, so right now I'm in the middle of His Revenge Baby, which is the second one in the series. Mm-hmm. And I've already read His Everlasting Love.
The first one?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I've already read His Everlasting Love and His Enduring Love. And so now I'm like going back to the second one. I know you hate it. I'm a chaos monster. It's fine.
I'm just dissociating. It's fine. Keep going.
Yeah. And I cannot wait to tell you and patrons about it because Theodora Taylor is a sight to behold. She is a presence to, I don't know, just be consumed by. You know,
because I have things that I'm reading that I've been in a slump lately.
Yeah. Which
I know that my slump looks very different from other people's slumps. Other people are like, I haven't read in 4 months. And I'm like, I only read 8 books in 4 weeks. Like, I understand that these are different things. But for me, it's a slump. But we'll get into it in my lady love. But I do have a series that I think I'm going to want to talk to you about because I fucked up.
Ooh, I'm excited. Okay, well, we have people to shout out, and they are...
Hell yeah, we do.
...the people we will be recapping those books for.
these 12 people specifically. Everybody else can listen along, but it's specifically...
Dedicated to these 12. ...the Theodora Taylor
episode is dedicated to you.
Yeah. Okay, so, hey, new patrons, welcome and thanks to Amelia Y and Leah C.
To Grace and Natasha N.
Emma and Fiona B. I'm so happy that you joined. Hello.
Yes, thank you. And then to longtime patrons, we'd like to thank Tabitha B. and Molly H.
Tara S. and Maddie K.
Mariah C. and Megan D. Thank you for your support over this time.
Yeah, really. You're incredible. And I really appreciate it.
Because we couldn't do this without y'all.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Any hoodles.
Okay. Are you ready to do a book in one episode? Are you ready?
We're going to, for the first time.
Have you strapped your tits in? Goddamn
books. Okay. So actually, listener, it's kind of funny because I fully rigged this in my benefit. This is our newest reading list that I was in charge of putting together with assistance from some patrons and their votes. And then I got to make some decisions all on my lonesome. And I literally just was like, Mary.
I am Mary. Very happy Mary.
Mary Melody. Melody started to try and tell me about this in the February reading roundup, and this book has been on my TBR for like ever, and I know Melody. Even if she's like, I won't spoil it for you, she would. I wanted this to be a spoiler free experience, and so I said, you know what, it's going on this fucking reading list, and guess what, it's the first goddamn book that we're doing on this reading list.
Hell yeah. Well, and I found it because of Katie Robert. She was like, you love alien romance. I think you're going to love this author's alien romance. And I think she might have done like an Omega something or other that you might be interested in.
I did, in fact, go to look at her back catalog.
I think her newest one in that series, the second book in that series, is coming out soon this year. I'm stoked. Yeah. Elizabeth Stevens is a new one click for me, I'll tell you that much. Because the world building in this is bananas.
It's incredible. It's fucking fantastic.
And she does not shy away from a tough subject.
Oh my.
So dude. Trigger warnings.
Okay, so trigger warning people. There's some trigger warnings in this book.
Yeah. We're going to trigger warn you, I think. There's, oh boy. There's SA, there's slavery. Yeah, there's slavery, yeah. There's, what else is there? Aren't those the big ones?
There's abortion, if that's something that is hard for you to handle. Like, abortion by choice. It's not abortion because of choice. It's abortion because they have no other choice because they, like, it's from the essay and it will literally cause death.
Yeah.
That was not answered in this book, by the way. I guess that there's medical help. Now we'll get into it, but have you read farther than this book?
Not yet. No.
Not yet. Okay. Do you know the next book is about Kiki?
Yes, I do. Of course I do.
Watch me lose
my ever loving mind.
Oh my God. I'm ready for that warrior bitch.
Hell yeah. All right,
let's fucking go. So we open up in this world. We're going to give you a little bit of context in this world. So we're coming in hot.
Oh yeah.
There are humans. They have escaped Earth. I don't really understand why. Some kind of apocalypse, I guess. Yeah. And they ended up on this moon. Whimsy. Long story short, a bunch of aliens found these humans on this moon.
And the moon was like Danger Town. You know, the moon was, you know, Monster Central, and the alien race that found them were like, We will get you a biodome that will keep monsters out and keep fresh air in and stuff. But in return, we are going
to
do
have to let us hunt you.
Yeah, we're going to do a compulsory rape hunt every year.
Yep.
And every year they call it a solar because the world building is excellent.
No. So a revolution is their version of a year. A solar, is a day.
Yeah, you're right.
A lunar is a month. And then I'm pretty sure that a revolution is roughly the equivalent of three.
Three?
No fucking way. I refuse to believe that because they're allowed to hunt anybody that is seven revolutions.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
15 revolutions. And I can accept a lot of things, but I refuse to accept 14 to 30 is the allowed range.
Okay, you're totally right.
That could make sense, but also I would rather, not rather.
I forgot it was seven. I thought it was more than that.
No, because the age of consent in Varaxian culture is five.
Yes.
So
you're right.
I refuse to believe.
Yeah, that it's totally only 2 years. That would be awful for humans specifically. Yes. Because humans, like, people don't really know a bunch about them, and they're like the lowest of the low.
Well, yeah, who cares? Basically, the humans are treated like animals they can fuck. Right, that's what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, yeah. They're
the bare minimum. And then, of course, obviously, eat the rich. There's a fucking group of people who keep all of the rations, and they don't have to participate in the hunt.
A group of humans. They're like the assembly or something like that.
Yeah, the anti-Kythera Council.
Yes.
And Matilda's the head bitch of it. And
Matilda needs to go down.
I think Matilda needs to get what's coming. Mm-hmm. And what that is
punishment. Punishment. Yeah.
Yeah.
So our heroine is one of the only hybrids that was a product of one of these hunts.
The first one.
That's right. The very first one. Because at that point, they didn't know that taking the pregnancy to term and birthing the baby would literally kill the mother no matter what. Because they have very primitive medical bullshit there. Apparently, the greater Varaxian culture is very about trades and bargains. Pacts and stuff.
And bartering. Uh-huh.
But
can I tell you, Mel?
What?
Real quick.
Yeah.
The way it was described, I fully imagined what, like, that Alien v. Predator movie or whatever. Alien comes out of the person's stomach. That's immediately what I imagined.
Yeah.
I've never even seen that movie. I've only seen the scene, but it lives rent-free in my head. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's the birth. Mm-hmm. That's what's happening.
I hate it. Anyway, so since then, we don't find this out until later on in the book, but since then, any pregnancies that result from the hunt are terminated because otherwise they'll kill all of the ladies, period, the end. And a lot of times the babies also die. Well, like there's two hybrids.
There were six women who got pregnant. All six died. Four of the babies died and only two of the hybrids lived.
Yeah. So Mary is not only part human, which is sort of like animal status, even though they're sentient. She is also like a cast out of her own society because she's a hybrid. And whether people are reminded by her mere presence of the trauma that they endured because of the hunt, or just the fact that she like looks different. She has red skin and like really, really straight hair. Whereas I love this, the beauty standards on this colony and in the future human times, you know, before, is really geared toward having darker skin and curlier hair.
Mm-hmm.
So it's time for the next hunt, and people are really, really freaked out about it. She has two very close friends. One's name is Svera. Svera is, she's a human who worships the Tri God.
Mm-hmm.
And Kiki is a friend who is like the beauty ideal, has already participated in the hunt once.
Multiple times, wasn't it?
I don't know. I think I wiped all of that from my brain because I just didn't want to.
I don't remember exactly. I just know that she had one bad, really bad experience. I think that it's more than once, though. I think the last one is what, quote unquote, broke her, though.
Okay, yeah.
Was how it was described.
Yeah. And as a result, she has, like, drawn into herself and learned to defend herself, and she's become very hard in response to that trauma. So it is now time for the next hunt, and she's not old enough yet. You're supposed to be six solars old.
Seven.
No, god damn it, six revolutions.
So she's six solars old. And this is why it makes sense to me. She's 18, right? Like, this is,
yes,
as far as like human world is concerned, and us as readers unfortunately live on this human world, it makes sense that 18, like, just based on how age ranges tend to be in sci-fi romances and things like that, it is not shocking that she's gonna be in her early 20s when the actual romance takes place,
right?
And that they met when she was younger, etc., etc. So the way that these hunts work too is real fucked up. Because
it's
all
bad,
of the
guys.
Eligible,
like,
women.
Big trigger warning here. Like, really, if SA is your, tough,
honestly,
get out of here.
If SA
I love
is
you
tough,
so much.
Don't listen to this episode.
Yeah. Like,
there's so much.
There are so many episodes in our back catalog that would be great for you. And I love you, and take care of yourself and make good choices. Okay.
Absolutely.
We're going to keep talking about a lot of SA now.
So all of the eligible women get lined up naked and are kneeling in this sand field because it's a sand desert planet.
Yeah.
And then everybody else who is not eligible is on the outside of a fence just watching this ship land.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't actually see a hunt ever.
No, thank goodness.
Yeah. Because the aliens land, and Boraku, who is the head alien that comes every year.
Right. And whose father founded the hunt and, like, made the pact for the dome bullshit.
Yes. He arrives, and he is here with two honored guests, and that is Boraku and Raku.
And they look different. The Boraku is a Draxian, I think, and so he has, red skin.
Drakish?
Yeah, Drakish.
Drakish, something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He has red skin and stuff. And then the other two are Varaxian. So they're like a grayish blue situation with lots of armored plates all over them.
Why is a blue alien just so hot? Like, did Ruby Dixon just, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, pull us into a cult? What is it?
I don't know. Woo us?
There's some listener out there that's just fucking screaming
absolutely
at their phone right now. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But, like, they're just super hot, sexy. They have an exoskeleton, which is kind of cool. They have completely black eyes with very little pigmentation that you can see any changes in. They have horns that show, well, we don't know this yet, but they have horns that show their emotions and change color. Their whole skin changes color.
It's like
color.
A brow situation that changes color. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. That is not how I understood that. I understood that they have ridges, but I was imagining, like, almost a crown of horns.
Oh, interesting. I was imagining,
and then they also have ridges.
And then the stuff that goes on their, you know, on their forehead, like, goes out to their horns. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Who knows?
Like big curly owl eyebrows.
Okay. Yeah, I love it. Let's do that.
That's it.
I dig it.
So blue guy gets here.
And he's confused.
Yes. Oh my God. Raku is so
confused.
He spends, I'm pretty sure, 80% of this book just lost.
Golly, he doesn't know what's going on. And Boraku hasn't been much help because
he hasn't been honest, because this is illegal as fuck.
Yeah. Yeah. So all of a sudden, you know, they're, like, looking at all of the women offerings, I guess, the ones who aren't behind the fence.
Mm-hmm.
And he's trying to be like, okay, so they want this hunt. Like, this is their cultural thing.
Well, he's also shocked that they're sentient.
Yeah. Yes.
He didn't even know that they were going to be sent. He had no idea what he was coming to this planet for.
No, not at all.
He did not understand that it was a get your dick wet venture.
Yeah, like, gross. Yeah. When Matilda comes up to be like, hello, fearless alien leaders, these are what we're working with this year, these women who are kneeling. I don't know, man. I can't. I'm sure Matilda was much less uncomfortable and so much more articulate in the way.
Check out our stock. We just got a fresh shipment in.
I hate it. It's so bad.
It is. But sorry. Anyway, I have to laugh because otherwise no, I will same. Cry. It's so fucked up.
Same. So then Raku feels what he calls his Xana start like coming through his whole system.
Did you listen to the audiobook?
There's an audiobook of this?
Yes.
I'm sorry. I eyeball read this when there was an audiobook.
Yeah.
I asked specifically if there was an audiobook and internet was like, go fuck yourself.
The fact that we are describing the same book right now and I listened to an audiobook of it was like fantastic. Or it means that there's an audiobook. So there is an audiobook and it is fascinating. So the language of Voraxia is a completely made up language, but there are aspects of it. She talked about it in the author's note at the very beginning, like the pronunciation guide.
Right.
And it has, I don't remember the name of the language, but it's a language where there's a lot of like clicks, like as part of the language. And so it's Anna, Anna. And like, if there's a hard X at the beginning instead of an H, it's clicks. And like the voice actor who did all of that,
yeah,
he was fan fucking tastic. And it was hilarious listening to the humans because they were like, Xana.
Yeah, that's how I say Xana, Xana. Xana, Xana.
Well, like, we're going to refer to it that way.
I'm so sorry. I have to do listener a favor right now. And that is that Elizabeth Stevens has done us all a giant favor and done an audiobook collection of books 1 through 3 plus a novella.
Oh, fuck yeah.
So I'm getting that right now. I just clicked it with my hands.
Straight up. Like, okay, so I half read this and half listened to it. And like, because that's what happens every time. I listen to the first half of it and then I'm like, oh shit, I'm running out of time. Time to like fucking truck it, which means I switch over to eyeball reading.
Yeah.
And I will probably go back and listen to the last half because it was so fucking good. Like the voice acting was really, really incredible. It really added a dimension. So I would recommend, especially because you're a re-listener.
I am. Like,
I would highly suggest going back and just restarting from the beginning, frankly.
Amazing.
Mel.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah. I mean, I do have to finish his revenge baby. You know what I mean?
This is true.
It's like nothing's going to stop me from finishing that. And then, you know, then I'll check out.
Okay. So you're helping out listener. But where is this audiobook collection? Is it?
I found it on Audible.
It is on Audible? Oh my God, so I can use a credit for it. Fuck yes.
Yeah.
Awesome. That's amazing. So anyway, he's here and he does feel his Xana. And that is essentially like the mating. It's like the fated mate feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he feels it. And then he sniffs Kiki because Kiki is there. And he's like, this isn't quite it.
But it's close.
It's close. And it turns out it's because Kiki touched like their friends.
Yeah.
And so some of Miari's
scent
is on her.
Some of her pheromones and skin dust and stuff.
Gotta get that big sniff. Like he like fully goes down to like his knees, like hand in the dirt, and he's like all up in her face just being like.
And we get that from Mary's perspective behind the fence. And she's so protective of Kiki because she knows how traumatized she's been in the past. And so she's standing there with Svera, and then he like keeps following his sniffer nose until he finds her.
His schnooflin.
Yeah. And then he's like, oh my gosh, it's my Zveri mate.
He also fully rips the fence out of the ground and growls and roars like a rampaging monster to get to her. And then he does get to her and she's like, why am I wet? Why is my cooter having feelings?
Absolutely.
Why? What the fuck is happening?
I
why
hate
am
these
I
people.
Horny? What is this? And yeah, well, you think you hate them, Yuri.
I know. It's the Xana. It's fine. But he finds out that she's underage. As far as humans are concerned, as far as Vraxians are concerned, she is of age. But for humans, their idea of age of consent, I guess, or like age of majority is 7 revolutions. And so
I will say that fucked with me every single time that it came up. They're like, she's only 6. And I'm like,
I know.
I'm having to get over a lot of.
I don't like it. So he decides that because he can smell that she's terrified, too. And he doesn't understand why she hasn't understood that she recognized him. What's up, Sabrina?
I have a lot of questions for you over the course of the next scene.
I don't know that I have any answers for you.
You probably don't because I re-listened to this twice because I was like, what?
Okay.
The fuck.
Okay.
So to break it down. He gets up there. They don't speak the same language because the humans don't have translators. Sphera does know how to speak Vraxian, though, kind of. And so she's able to do a little bit of translation. Mm-hmm. Not very well because she learned it from like soap opera, like the Vraxian soap operas, basically. Mm-hmm. But she's translating a little bit. He can tell that Miari's scared. He's pissed as fuck at Sphera because she can't understand half the shit. Sphera's like, what's a Xana? What's a Javeri mate? What is all of these things? And he's like, what the fuck do you mean?
Right.
This is true love. Yeah. This is all of my feelings. I have to stick it in.
It's
oh my God, what do you mean she's too young?
I never thought that I would find. I never thought I would find my Javeri mate. So he decides that he is going to leave her to mature more, like a fine wine. He's just decided that she's going to sit in his wine closet.
Leave that apricot on the tree.
That's the one. And he's going to go back out into space. But he looks around at the settlement and he's like, okay, this is some bullshit. I'm going to send a lot more supplies to y'all. And you are going to make sure that citizen is taken very good care of.
So this is where my question comes in. He has a lot of questions. He does not understand half of what Sphera is saying. He's also pissed off. Why would he not go talk to the so-called leader of the human settlement who does have a translator and could probably explain some shit?
Well, because I do have an answer to this, and it's because Rakus do not ask questions.
Oh my God, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah. It shows weakness to ask questions. Your citizens are just supposed to give it up on the spot.
I'm going to tell you real quick that I do really love these characters, but I have been referring to it as the Ding Dong Book.
Okay.
Because Raku's a fucking ding dong.
He's such a sweet ding dong.
And so is Miari, frankly. They're both ding dongs. I love them to pieces. They have lots of smart moments, but there were times where I was like, literally in my notes, there's so many times where I'm like, and then this ding dong does blah, blah, blah. And then that ding dong does blah, blah, blah.
I mean, Mary, I didn't think she was a ding dong the whole time. Just
not the
because
whole time.
Of her
there were
power
a couple of times.
Situation, the power imbalance between them and her lack of understanding of his culture.
That's absolutely accurate.
Yeah.
Half of his ding-dongism is because he doesn't understand human culture. Like, it's fine.
Sure.
I understand. This is not a judgment. This is not an angry thing. I loved
it. No, totally.
I was delighted by the ding-dong-itiness. Like, it was fantastic.
By the ding-dong antics that were happening.
Yes, I just loved it. I just loved calling them ding-dongs. I love these ding-dongs. So
yeah,
continuing.
So he leaves with the express thought that he's going to get the truth out of Boraku, and he is going to punish him for any wrongs that he finds that Boraku has done, because something is not right here. But he's also not super sure what it is. The thing that he thinks is the most wrong is that while, like, greater Vraxian citizens can consent to things like hunts, They haven't in a long time. And he doesn't understand why these sentient beings haven't been fully fledged, haven't become fully fledged citizens of Varaxia. And with that comes something called like a life drive and translators and, you know, basically a living wage and enough supplies to like be totally stable and good and taken care of kind of situation.
Yeah.
And Boraku is like, well, it's because they're animals. And he's like, they're not, though. They can talk and think and do all the things. And Boraku is trying to keep them that way so that he can continue taking advantage of them horribly.
Because Boraku is a massive piece of shit.
Absolutely.
He only becomes a bigger piece of steaming shit the more that you learn in this book.
Truly.
So, zippy zap, it's a rotation later. And we are in Miari's point of view, and she and Kiki have decided to escape. Oh, because he made the statement that she needs to be specifically taking care of all of these things. Mm-hmm. And when he gets back, if everything is good and he's happy and pleased with how things are, mm-hmm. then he will take care of the humans for the rest of their
existence.
Not even lifetime. Yeah. Like your children's children, until the last human dies, you will be taken care of. Well, Miari doesn't get that information. And
no, she just thinks that this guy's coming back to fucking hunt her.
Exactly. And so she and Kiki decide to escape the city. They give Sphera a hologram thing that she built herself.
Mary because she's did.
An inventor. Mary is like such a fucking badass.
Yeah.
She's
a tinkerer and she has no supplies, but still manages to like salvage enough to make these badass inventions. So they leave Sphera there dressed as Mary and they're
hologrammed as Mary, like,
and they're off in a cave somewhere.
Yeah. After crawling through the sewers, you know how miserable it would be to crawl through the sewers and then have to hike across the goddamn dangerous ass desert.
I mean, I think it shows just how desperate they are
to escape
their situations. Yeah,
exactly.
Because Kiki's like, I would rather die from anything else.
So
frankly,
Kiki doesn't speak anymore. Kiki only talks through a piece of charcoal and a pad of paper.
Yeah.
So they make it to this cave, they block off the cave, and then they're, oh my God, Mel, you haven't listened to the audiobook. I was listening to this book at night. I had to stop listening and read it instead during this scene.
Why?
Because the creature, so they're in this cave and they hear these noises,
oof,
right?
Oof, oof, oof.
And to give you a little bit of an experience, she's making all of the sound. So she's like, dum, dum.
Yes.
Dum. Dum, 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 dum. It's like Jaws in my brain. And then you can hear the breathing and she's just like. And then the creep. So they're in this cave and this fucking creepy crit. So, you know how I have a lot of fears.
No.
We talked about a lot of them on podcasts.
No,
right?
Not you.
A recurring.
A theme, aspect. If you will.
Uh-huh, of these fears is not knowing what's there.
Yeah,
right?
Well, like, yeah. The dark encompasses that.
The deep water encompasses that. At a dark cave, I have a terrible fear of spelunking.
Oh, absolutely.
I think they're fucking Looney Tunes. I have nightmares. One time I read the story. Have you ever heard about the man who got stuck in the cave upside down and died in the cave? And they filled the cave with concrete. I can't remember what it's called. It's like the Nutty Putty or like the Nitty Gritty or something.
Nutty Putty Cave.
Yeah.
It's out in Utah.
I have nightmares about it
because
I read that article. Anyway, that kind of shit freaks me out. Oh, like a cave. I love a cave, though. Like, I love going walking through a cave. Beautiful. Awesome. Where, like, they have all the lights and then
water
they, like,
shouldn't be there, though.
They turn them all off and it's like dark and I freak out for a second and then the lights come back on and it's fine. I would not be okay if those lights did not come back on. Although the adrenaline junkie in me desperately wants to go on one of those tours you can go on where all you have is like a flashlight kind of thing.
No. Mm-mm. Yeah.
I would. Like, the adrenaline junkie in me wants to do it. The person with anxiety who has to take panic medication thinks that I'm a fucking lunatic.
Yep.
But regardless, they're in there. And then all of a sudden they hear, sack. And that's like how she does it. And then she start like, she's screaming it because the thing is getting closer and it's getting excited. Sack, sack. And it's like, I was like, I can't fucking do this. I had to stop listening.
Incredible. Because it was so scary.
It was so fucking scary.
Yeah.
Like, this is a great example of a narrator just doing the most. And boy, that most worked. Yeah. In the best and worst kind of way.
Artist.
This fucking creepy ass thing that we're not even going to describe because I did have a nightmare about it. it's fucking creepy and terrifying. Turns out this is its den. And Kiki, the badass warrior, does her best. And
she does her
does
best.
A slash and slashy slash with this thing that Miari had made for her.
And she tells Miari to like run. Hard. Yeah. Like, get out of here. Don't worry. I'll take care of it. And doesn't she have a new sort of kind of knife that Miari made?
That's what I'm saying is like Miari made her a weapon and it's like a electrified something, something. And then Miari also has this like fancy amp thing that she just finished. And it's basically a bomb gun.
Yeah.
And they do make it out. Kiki is like mortally wounded.
Yes.
And
hardcore.
They get out of the den. Kiki successfully did kill the one inside of the den. But there, guess what? There's like four more.
Oh, my God. They're right outside waiting for them.
Screaming their fucking sack song and coming up the goddamn side of this mountain with all of their legs. It's fucking heinous. And
they have so many legs, you guys. There's so many legs zap. On them.
Well, so Kiki is like mortally wounded and is like, I'm fucking doing this and grabs that bomb. And then we zippy zap.
Now we're with Raku and all of the offerings, all of the ladies who are there to do the hunt times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so he goes over to his very mate and he's like, hey, girl, wait, hold on. You smell really bad. You smell different. You smell wrong. Mm-hmm. And then he finally figures out that she is a hologram. She's a lying, liar, traitorous hologram. And so he has to jump on a bunch of desert jet skis. And Varaku goes with him.
That's exactly what they are. They're desert jet skis.
That's absolutely what they are. Totally.
Oh, my God. Do you think they make ones with rooster tails?
Yes. Oh, I feel like they have to.
They would have to. Although that sounds miserable. Absolutely. Like, it's
you can't be behind it.
It's funny when your friend rooster tails you at the lake. It is not funny when you get rooster tailed by a bunch of fucking molten sand.
Mm-mm.
That's not great.
So he and Varaku. Yeah. Oh, also, these are not names that we're telling you. These are titles.
Yes.
Because apparently all non-slave beings in Varaxia are either children or they graduate into a title.
Yeah. And like your name is literally considered your slave name. If you don't have a title, that's your slave name.
Yes. Yeah.
And I guess it's a holdover from the past when slavery was rampant.
Right, right. So Raku is like the emperor of everything.
King.
Mm-hmm. And then he has a bunch of like dukes and shit.
Yeah, you have Zubraku, you have Voraku, you have
No. Those are Zubraku is the category.
Yeah, Duke, essentially.
Yeah, Zubraku is a Duke. And then like depending on the region, then, like, it's like Boraku, Varaku, all the stuff.
Yeah, kind of like the Duke of Canterbury versus the Duke of Isles or whatever. I don't know. I'm just throwing out fucking random ass shit. But like that's what those are.
Yeah. So Varaku goes with him because Varaku is a very trusted advisor, you know, like he's his right hand man kind of situation.
Girl, can I tell you I Sherlock Holmes the fuck out of that?
What?
That enemy to lovers.
Oh, the
minute Varaku showed up on page, I was like, this is Kiki's.
Yeah, this is Kiki's mate. Oh, it's exciting. Mm-hmm. So anyway, they get there just in time to see these nightmare monsters coming up the hill going after them. So Varaku gets like, he immediately hones in on Kiki, whose like intestines are lying on the ground next to her. And she's like fixing to blow shit up. And Raku hones in on Miari.
Miari?
Miari. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So then he does a big, giant fighty times on all of these monsters.
He literally rips one of the legs off, shoves his hand into its chest cavity, and then stabs it in the heart.
Yeah.
I was like, you fucking go, dude.
Wow. You're doing it, is what he's doing. Wow.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, cool.
So anyway, we zippy zap, and now they're on Raku's ship.
Yeah, and he is basically forcing her into the shower because she is covered in blood, dirt, feces, and piss, and she's a fucking hot mess. And he is still so fucking horny for her because since he met his Zanazana, his Javeri mate, he cannot come. This man has three balls, and he has not come in 3 years.
And that's the thing, right, is the 3 years that really gets me. Wow. That's a whole situation to walk away from your Javeri mate for that long.
I would not trust that she wouldn't be dead when I got back.
Like, I can't believe there wasn't more supervision over that assembly, because we do learn that while they got more rations, the rations weren't equally distributed.
No, and like, it all went to the audacity
of that Matilda bitch being like, oh, he told me that like she needs to be put in bubble wrap, but I'm not even going to feed her more. I don't even care. Is wild to me.
Well, because like, do you think he's not going to find out?
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, so how was it those 3 years in between me being there and you being there?
I just can't believe he also didn't do more oversight, you know? At least, like,
even if it was just an annual trip.
Yes. Even if it's not you going yourself, Raku.
Even if you could not handle yourself and keep your Zora in your goddamn pants. Zora's
oh my god,
dick.
Zora's a dick. Oh, I
keep
love it.
Keep your Zora in your goddamn pants.
Yeah.
Like,
God, it's so dumb.
Send somebody else. Send Varaku.
Right?
You trust Varaku.
Yeah. Anyway, okay, so here's the deal. So they're in this shower. It's shower times. And
it's steamy shower times.
Yeah. And he like touches up on her tail, which is a serious erogenous zone.
I have never wanted a tail more in my life than reading this book.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like showing her that this is an erogenous zone, basically. And her Zanazana is going nuts. Mm-hmm. And then.
Well, because she's also realized she doesn't really hate him.
No.
He hasn't done anything cruel to her. So like, this is not a bad essay situation. I feel like I need to make that clarification, because up until now it's been like the hunt. We've been harping on that a lot for good reason.
Right.
But this is not that kind of situation. She's already softened towards him a little bit.
She knows that the hunt is not happening this year
at all. It didn't happen the last time and it didn't happen this time.
Yeah. So he finger bangs her.
Dude, my favorite thing is that she's a woman who knows what she wants. She fucking straight up grabs his hand and puts it on her clit.
Yeah.
She's like, this is where I want it.
This is my go button.
She's never, ever had any sort of sexual interaction with it. And she's like, I know what I want.
That's right.
And I want you to touch me right here.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Bless you, Miari. Like, you beautiful bitch.
It's fantastic. And then she gets taken to his quarters and she gets... He's trying to like rub up on her, and he's got her on the bed and everything. And she keeps on being like, wait, no, I think we can be friends. Like, no. And so he like gets a little bit frustrated, and then he just like puts some living liquid into her ear.
He like, what's it called? A wet
ear wigs her. Yeah. Yeah. A wet willy.
Yes. Loogie. That's awful.
I mean, I think that's kind of what it was. It's like
it
viscous.
Was. It's also like, as far as I can tell, a living...
It's an organism.
...being that is the translator.
Yeah.
And he's like, can you understand me? And she's like, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
What the fuck did you just put in my ear?
Uh-huh. And it rearranged all of her brain parts in a good way. So now they can understand each other.
It was also just like, so funny to me because, like, before he gives her the translator, it's described that he just looks... Like, he just fought all of this shit, and he just looks so tired by her.
Yes, he's exhausted.
He's just like, ma'am, I need you to just come on. Please.
And he's mystified as to how she doesn't know what a Javeri mate is. It's very clear that she has no idea
Mm-hmm. That brings up a question. I'm very interested to see in one of the fully human heroine books how that works, how the genre works, because I bet that she can feel it a little bit because of the Drakesh blood in her.
Yeah.
But like, Kiki's not going to fucking accept that.
Yeah. Like, I'm so excited for Kiki's book.
Mm-hmm.
And we get to learn about them pretty soon. Because he says we're mates, we're or the Zanna wants us to have sex. And she's like, that's Nutter Butters. You're talking crazy. And like, I want to see my friends. And he's like, you mean the traitors? Yeah, I've got them.
Because by the way, he fucking hates Severa and he hates Kiki because he thinks that Severa and Kiki had this big old plan to keep her from him. And he's like, how fucking dare they?
Yeah.
And she's like, I kidnapped myself, bro.
I did it. This was an escape plan.
And he's like, no, they're traitors. That's it. No.
Yeah.
He basically like Raku plugs his fucking ears and he's just like, la, 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 la.
It's so true.
Ding dong.
Yeah. So I don't remember exactly how it happens in this conversation, but both of them understand the language of a pact.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, I want your enthusiasm. I want your desire. I don't force people to have sex with me. And so I want you to be excited about it. And she's like, well, I can be excited about it if
you don't hurt my friends.
Yep. You don't hurt my friends. And I get to see them and I get to confirm that. Well,
and then
that.
they keep like adding little bits and pieces here and there. And it basically boils down to if she gets to see her friends, if she gets to take care of her friends and confirm that they're OK, then he can dick her down real good.
Mm-hmm.
So
he goes straight for the dick and down. And she's whoa. Friends first. And he's like, what? Are you kidding me right now? And she's like, no, I can't trust you. You need to prove to me that you're going to keep your word. And so you keep your word and then I'll keep mine. And he's just like,
so he's like, fine. So he like throws some clothes at her, throws some pants on himself or like a loincloth on himself. And then
it's hard to strap that Zora down. You know what I mean?
I don't think he's strapped down at all. I think he was walking around with a flag waving. So they go find Kiki and Voraku is straight up.
He's standing vigil
while she's in this tank of another organism, essentially, or like it's a tank full of little organisms that will heal her completely. So anything that has ever been wrong with her is being healed right now. It's going to take a long time because, again, she could have played jump ropes with her intestines. And then Raku's like, all right, she's fine. Ready to go have sex?
Yeah.
And she's like, no.
Where is Vera?
There's another human.
So he takes her to his captain of the guard kind of situation. Mm-hmm. And how was this pronounced in the book?
I do not remember.
Crixox?
I don't remember.
Okay, well, I've been calling him Crixox. So there's like two ladies who leave. One is a Varaxian and one is Drakesh. And then they walk in and Crixox still has just like a boner waving around in there. And she's like, wait, whoa. You have Severa with this person? Like, this is bananas. And he's like, no, he would never mate with a human. He's racist.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, he's racist. Yes. Oh, what a mess. But Sarah's still locked in the wet room.
She's hiding because she wears a hijabs, right?
Yeah.
So for her religion, she worships the Trigod and wears a hijab. And when they were being attacked and stuff, because Raku does essentially, we skipped over this, but Raku does essentially attack her and break her arm accidentally.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Because he's all pissed off at her because she won't tell him where Miari is.
And humans are very fragile.
And yes, comparatively.
He didn't mean to, but.
Well, he legitimately didn't mean to, which is why.
Yeah, I'm not being an apologist. I'm just stating a fact.
Okay.
He legitimately didn't mean to.
You were like, meh. And I was like, what?
Yeah, Yeah.
But yeah, so her at some point, I don't remember how exactly, her hijab gets ripped, and then she was trying to get Krixox to give her the sheet on the bed so that she could cover her hair, and he won't, and so she's hiding in the bathroom. And so Miari throws her fucking weight around a little bit, and she's like, give her the goddamn sheet.
Yeah.
And now, what's his butt? Raku has figured it out. He's like, okay, what will you give me for the sheet? And she's like trying to think of something, and she's like, I'll give you a kiss. And this ding dong, I love him, has no idea what a kiss is. But the fact that she was willing to offer that up as something she thinks he might like, he's like, I'm curious.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll interesting, interesting. Okay, the other the other thing is Krixox won't get a translator. And so Svera was trying to explain to him why she needed the sheet. And he was being like, it's for my fucking bed. Like, what are you? No. That's she's, no.
She's like, I need this. And he's like, I need it more.
Why would you need this? No, this is ridiculous.
That's my bed.
Yeah.
What are you doing, you stupid human?
I've got two bitches coming over soon. They want sheets. Yeah. So anyway, she gets a covering, and Miari tells her what the bargain has been. And
yeah,
Svera, because she's a follower of the Trigod, is like, you're a virgin and this is like important. And she's like, nah, you know, not really me.
On top of that, though, Svera's like, you don't have to do this.
Yeah.
And Miari's like, too late. And right. Yeah, I kind of do.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah. So now it's time. They go back to.
Dude, it's fucking on TM.
It's so good. They go back to his quarters. God.
She kisses him.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, at first he like reels back, like, what the fuck is this human doing?
Yeah.
And then he realizes, oh,
wait, no. I and like then she these. Says, did I do it wrong? I haven't actually done it before. And he's like, what is this? And she's like, well, it's a kiss. And he's like, explain to me this kiss. Explain to me this human custom kiss. And she's like,
What is kiss?
Yeah. Show me again. And she's like, wait, you want me to try again? And he's like, yeah, sure. So she puts her mouth on his, and then after a minute, she pulls back and she's like, can you like relax your lips? He keeps on calling it her mouth pillows.
Her mouth pillows.
They're so much softer than his.
Okay, I fucking loved that this entire book, from his point of view, his alienness never gets less alien.
Yeah.
He never gets humanized in this book. And it's just, I don't have a problem with that. That's how it happens in most sci-fi romances. That's totally fine. I love that the entire way through, he was just such an alien.
Yeah. Yeah. He was an alien ding dong.
That's exactly what he was.
I know.
I love that. I love an alien ding dong so much. It's my favorite kind of ding dong.
Well, and then as soon as her little tongue snakes out and whatever, he's like, snicky. My tongue can join the party. And then he's like, oh my God. And now I'm just like crushing her against me. And instead of like pulling back or being horrified, she's given as good as she's getting.
Raku, she whispers, and I'll be damned to the universe's lowest rung. The sound of my title on her tongue does things to me. I could sink cities for her.
Oh.
Hearing her speak to me in such a way. Please, she begs, and I shiver all over. Nox.
Not cities.
Civilizations.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Boy.
Wow. And then it's on. It's real fucking great.
He goes down on her like a champion.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And she's like, you know, she's screaming like, Raku, please let me come. And he's like, I should be worried about her dignity and stuff, but I just want everybody to hear her shouting in pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And then
he flips her over and moves her tail.
This is my other favorite alien bit, though, because right after she comes from oral, she's like, oh, my gosh, I could just like, you know, sink into a million pieces or whatever. And she says something about being tired. And then he goes, too tired to rut? And she's like, no, get over here.
Get over here,
come
bud.
Here, you.
You haven't even stuck it in yet. Mm-hmm. Hello? So then he does flip her over, scoot her tail out of the way, and then he goes at it.
It's he asks her again, are you ready? And she says yes. He says something to her in his language that she like can't understand, I guess, or something. I don't know. And then,
so there's a lot of like when he's in the middle of like when he's like in the middle of rut. Right. Yes. he starts muttering in his language quietly and quickly, and her translator can never pick it up, and we never get an answer. But I like to imagine it was perfect. It was so that is one. The world building in this book was so fucking good because it's imperfect, right? Mm-hmm. Like, technology is fallible. Mm-hmm. I'm like, my God, if anybody can tell you that, it's gonna be me. Like, I'm the one programming that technology. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it human or alien error, right? There's only so much we can do. And so, like, the fact that technology wasn't perfect was so nice. Even expensive, fancy, quote-unquote perfect technology still had its flaws. It was wonderful.
Right.
So I have one more quote.
Please. Listener would love to hear it.
When they're in doggy style. She sees me over her shoulder, and on her face she wears a pleasure expression that has the impact of a Sabron collider shot straight to the breast. Her grappling hooks bore into the cavernous hole left behind, and with one pull, she tears through bone and flesh and plates and leaves me open. Then she crawls inside.
Oh.
And it was like, fuck. Because, like, we're getting this from his point of view, so we are seeing that this is not just sex. This is...
No.
This is the mate bond.
This is this is satisfying the Xana.
Yeah. And then he calls her this. Okay, so that was your favorite alien part?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My favorite alien part was him calling her clit a delicious pleasure morsel. And just, like, all of his terms for, like, it feels like.
She makes, like, the pleasure sound, or, like, the, like, the something. Pleasure. It's her laugh.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It took,
and, like,
you know,
the pleasure expression is a smile.
That, like, it took me a hot minute sometimes to figure out what exactly, through this alien's eyes, what exactly was happening.
Yeah.
Sometimes the pleasure sound was, like, happy, like, laughter. Sometimes the pleasure sound, like, it varied, but it's, like, they don't have varied emotions the way that humans do. They don't reference them that way. And so he doesn't really, it's all levels of pleasure sound is the same thing, but sometimes it was, like, a cackle, it seems like to me. Sometimes it was like a giggle, but, like, you had to get that from context.
Yep, because he just
doesn't register it that way.
He doesn't have the language for it, because they express their emotions through the colors of their ridges.
It's kind of like how they have, you know, 35 different words for snow,
exactly,
or whatever,
exactly.
And we only have snow.
Yes, yeah,
because we just don't have the words.
Yeah.
Anyway,
okay, we got a motor.
Yeah,
so much good happens.
Yes. Luckily, I think that we can basically zippy zap through the last, like, six chapters of the book, essentially.
Yeah, fair.
So they fall asleep with him inside of her. And she's happy. She's so fucking happy. And then he wakes up in the middle of the night and leaves. Mm-hmm. And she thinks he just went to the bathroom. But when she wakes up alone, dude, she immediately goes
spirals.
Full. Yeah. Like, she's like, oh, my God, he hates me. That was terrible. I didn't please him. He's not going to stick to the pact.
And what he doesn't understand right now, and what she doesn't understand right now, is that the pact between the human assembly and the Drakesh was something that, like, their survival hinged on it. And he doesn't understand that she's bringing that energy into all of their pacts. So her whole deal was like, how do I, like, before they had sex, she was like, how do I know if I'm pleasing you? Because the future and safety of not only my friends, but my people depends on me pleasing you. I've never had sex before.
Well, I think
how am I supposed to guarantee that?
This is basically just kind of a fun thing. Like, I'll do this if you do this. Like,
yes,
kind of
absolutely.
Thing. But because he still doesn't know enough about how things are on the moon. He still doesn't understand that the hunt is non-consensual and that the breeding harnesses are non-consensual.
And they're because he thinks that the hunt, and we haven't told you about these breeding harnesses, listener, but they sound, I don't know. They sound like Shibari, but bad.
See, I think that consensually it's fine, but the fact that any Shibari is bad if you're not consenting to it. This is
That's what I mean. It is Shibari, but bad.
Oh, yeah. Bad position. And I was like, I mean, if you haven't experienced rigor, then it should be fine.
But it's a complete immobility device. Yes. It's very strappy and stuff. And the only thing that I can think to equate it to at the moment is shibari. Essentially.
Yeah, or like device bondage.
And that is how they complete the hunt. And that is how Varaxians of many species have sex, period.
Apparently, that's the only way that they can conceive.
Right, is in like this very specific position that is achieved with the breeding harness.
That feels very against Darwinism. But that feels like you can only have sex in this one position.
Yeah. So he's never experienced the joy of just like sex the way he just had it with Mieri. Anyway, she's like, I have not pleased him. He's not here. This is really bad. He could be murdering everyone I love right now. And I also can't get out because he hasn't given the door permissions like with her biosignature.
So because she's a badass and also because she's hungry and hangry.
Yeah.
She does go tear the shower apart and build a bomb. And she is in the process of setting that bomb off and like, OK, I have 3 seconds to get from here to the bathroom door before it goes off. And then she hears him coming down the door. And so she hides it underneath the blanket and like sits down naked. And she's like, maybe he won't notice. And then I don't even remember, like, he kicks something or something and accidentally bumps it into it. And he's like, what the fuck? Why are you trying to kill yourself or kill me? Tell me what is wrong with you?
You will tell me right now.
And she's just like, I'm hungry. And he's like, what do you mean hungry? I fed you, like,
you ate.
I fed you earlier
this time. And she's like, I eat 3 meals a day.
And he's like, oh my God, I eat 4 times a lunar.
That's what that was. Yeah. He eats once a week for us.
Yes.
But that's more than a week.
Like a fucking python.
Yeah. So he's like, holy shit, I am sorry. Like, he doesn't say that because Rakus don't apologize.
Don't apologize.
Nor do they ask questions, nor they do other stuff.
So then she's like, you have to make sure to tell the other the other people taking care of the humans that they need to eat too. And he's like, what will you give it to me in exchange?
He's just fucking up left, right, and center. She's like, I don't know what else I can give to you.
Well, because she's like, I could see myself making it work with this man.
Yeah.
Or with this alien. And then he has to fucking do the pact thing again. And he doesn't understand what he's doing.
Right.
And he's ruining fucking everything because it makes her feel like a slave all over again. It makes her feel like a whore.
Yes.
So she offers to do the breeding belt in exchange for her and her friends getting fed.
Oof.
And now we're in his point of view and he can tell something's wrong, but he's not sure what's wrong because it's just two completely different cultures.
Right.
Just
he can tell that something bad happened, but he can't quite pinpoint exactly when nor what went wrong.
Yeah. So now he starts taking it on himself, too. So he's like, I do not even care for her properly as any male should. And I'm her very mate. I'm weak. Is this why she shuns me and rejects my touch? She does not even allow me to help her onto the glider. And I'm like, no, you ding dong. Yeah. This is why they're ding dongs.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So
they planet. No. Mm-hmm. Well, wait. Before they end up on the planet, he finds out something about like the hunt not being consensual because he's like, when we get on planet, I'm going to wreck Boraku. Like, I'm going to get to the bottom of this because he obviously misrepresented what was going on.
Yes.
And he might even know about the terminations too.
Not quite yet. He learns
not
this
yet.
Chapter.
Oh, okay. Okay. Sorry.
But essentially what it is they've landed and now they're on a glider back to the main city, essentially. It's like an airport.
Yeah.
And so this entire chapter basically takes place going to
the city on
the glider. So we learn about the terminations. We learn about the deaths. We learn about all of these things. And he's finally starting to understand. And he's also starting to realize that every pact that she has made is for somebody other than herself.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, because in this culture, you don't really have friends. You have people you trust. You have people who have your back, but you don't have friends. And he's like, why would you do these pacts for these humans you don't even care about, who you don't trust? And she's like, because like it's
they're my
betterment
people.
Of all of my people.
Yeah.
And this is when he's like, wow, she's going to make a great fucking queen. Meanwhile, she's walking around.
I loved that he honed in on that, being like, wow, she like instinctively puts the greater good above herself.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think one of the reasons that he finds out about the terminations is because he asks like, How are there only two hybrids if this is happening every revolution, you know, and like a bunch of warriors come to participate and stuff? And apparently birthing rates amongst a lot of greater Vorexia are really, really low. And gestation is much longer than humans normally gestate.
You can pry that trope out of my cold, dead body.
I know, right?
Like, people are like, oh my God, I can't believe yet another book where there are just not enough babies being born. And I'm like, where's my spoon? Where's my spoon?
I know. And I love that because like you're childless by choice. You know, I love that you love that. It's so fun.
It's so beautiful. Do you know, are you kidding me? Childless by choice and now literally no way to have a child. Mm. Do you know how much fucking fun I would have on those planets?
I hear you. Yeah.
It would be a endless buffet.
It would be a Sabrina carnival. It's what it
They'd
would be.
They'd be like, hey, I'd be like, hey, you want to practice on a human?
Yeah, we love that trope. Sex lessons. Hello.
Fucking love a sex lesson. So any hoodles, we make it back to the city and she meets some of the. Oh, well, firstly,
of the other titles.
This is very important. He is starting to understand that she sees herself as both a slave and a whore. Like he did not register that yet.
Right.
Okay. Like he did not understand that because he thought it was just like a little fun, you know, give and take and like power play. But guess what? You can't have a power play when there's a power imbalance.
Exactly.
It doesn't exist. So she commits a couple of cultural faux pas, unsurprisingly. Mm. And then I just have to say this is so, like mildly unimportant, but also like just such a beautiful thing. They live under trees, right? Yes. The sunlight does not hit the floor and their form of light is this river that reacts to ultraviolet light and glows like gold, but you can drink it. And like, I was thinking, I just can't stop thinking about that. That sounds so fucking beautiful. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so they head over to this hospital and this is when she realizes that, oh, he actually gives a shit about the humans because he goes straight into the healer Lumeria.
Yeah.
And she's like, I need you to take a look at Miari just in case she's conceived. And also, just so you know, we're going to be sending a squadron over to the humans on the moon to make sure, like, we're going to make them full Vorexians and we're going to give them childcare. We're going to give them medical care. We're going to give them rations. We're going to take care of them and all of these things.
And because the gestation is different, but, you know, they're much more able to populate. He's like, we need to figure out how these women can have hybrid babies without automatically dying. Because like, not only is it a tragedy that these women and babies are dying if they try to take the pregnancy to term, but also in their mind, in a universe where it's really, really tough to have kids, it's a tragedy that these women feel forced to terminate because they're choosing their own lives.
I will say
anything else.
This is such like this is a touchy topic. And like when I was reading the book, I was a little, there was a part of me that was like, I'm a little nervous to be talking about stuff like this on pod.
Okay.
Like about this entire book, but it was handled really well.
Yeah.
Like the wording and the way it was described and the way it was talked about, it never felt preachy, I guess.
It never felt judgy about abortion in particular. The issue was that the pregnancy itself was a death sentence to the woman and the baby.
Exactly.
And it's like a tragedy. It's not like a crime.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So then after he says this, she asks him what he wants in exchange in front of the healer. And he looks at her and says, "You dishonor me," he says, and his voice is sharp and cutting. "It renders me hollow straight down to my core. And worse, I don't have any idea what I've done or what he means or how to fix it. All I know is that the strange strand I felt in my chest pulling me to him suddenly feels like it's been cut.
Mm.
And I don't want it to be."
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was kind of the final straw. Like, he was like, what the fuck? Why would you assume this is going to be a pact?
Right. He says, "Do you really think I'm that dishonorable?" I think he says like of a male that I would make you like barter this basic human right, you know? Mm-hmm. And she's like, I don't understand. This is the way we've always been doing it since the dawn of time and since our relationship began. Like, you set this precedent. I didn't.
Yeah. So they end up back at his house and he can tell she pulled away and she can tell he's pulled away. And he basically tells her, you're going to sleep here and I'm going to go sleep at essentially the alien House of Commons.
But first, we see that he got the specialist, most beautifulest, most expensivest, rarest kind of breeding belt there is her specifically.
Are we not there yet? We are.
Okay. Yeah.
The way he does this is so fucking dramatic and it's beautiful.
He's Raku.
She sees the breeding belt next to the bed when he's giving her the tour. Ugh. And he whips out his sword and just slashy, slashy, slicey, slice. And then he looks at her and he says, I now understand the nature of this pact in its entirety. You have taught me this. Pact does not mean equal trade when there is an imbalance of power. Mm. Unlike the hunt that takes place on Sirion or the similar run of the mountain that takes place on Naboo, your people never had a desire to participate. Your people's pact with the Drakesh was was a forced trade. And now the pact between you and me is also forced. And then he talks about a bunch of other things. But finally, he says, I will dishonor you no longer by remaining in your presence. These chambers are yours until after the ceremony, and you will remain confined until then. But after that, you will have free reign of the kingdom. Oh, I'm sorry, of your kingdom.
Yes.
At this stage, we will determine a suitable living situation that brings neither discomfort onto you or shame onto our union. I hope that this may please you and that it may serve as a sign of contrition for the acts of my kind against your humans and of me against you. Though as for the latter, I never intended to dishonor you. It dishonors me to do so, and knowing that I have is a price I will pay for the remainder of my rotations.
Oof.
What a king.
Oof.
And dude,
she is so stunned that she can't make words. And so he just walks out. And up until this point, she's been calling him Raku. Oh my God, we forgot to tell them. Oh, I'm so sorry, listener. I've done you a wrong. At the end of, as they're like laying there after the first time they had sex, he says,
oh my God, we did.
I know. She says like something like, thank you, Raku. And he says, Zoran. My name is Zoran. My given name was Zoran. And then she's like, thank you, Zoran. And he and like his name coming out of her mouth is one of the best things that's ever happened to him. And he's been calling her Mieri in bed too.
Private.
Right.
Yeah. And something that before he left, because we're in his point of view for all of this. He notes that she is so fucking beautiful and that she is his, but no, she is her own and I cannot touch her.
Mm-hmm.
And so he is giving her full bodily, emotional, mental autonomy and is just removing himself from the situation.
Well, because I don't know that we adequately explain this either. In public, he calls her Rakukana. And that is basically queen. So what the passage was talking about, the ceremony in 3 days, that's basically her Rakukana coronation.
Yes.
And so she's going to learn more about the culture and learn more about the ceremony so that she's prepared and all of that. And when he says you're free to like do whatever, that's not like as a citizen, that is as queen. No matter her relationship with him, she's still queen, period, the end. And that's something that she doesn't quite understand for a while more in the book, too, because it's just such a foreign concept. I think at one point she thinks like, wait, I don't have to ask to like I see my friends or have something or whatever. I can just do it because I'm my own person. And he's like, because you're queen and a person. So yeah, he leaves and she hates it.
Yeah.
She hates it hard. She's like,
wait. But she does leave it alone. So the next time we see them together.
At the ceremony.
One quick thing that is important that can be summed up in one sentence is that Boraku gets his title stripped. He's now Paxiel. And he is stripped of his title. That land will be kept watch over by some of the other Rakus until somebody steps up to the plate, basically.
Mm-hmm. So until they find another duke.
Is no more. They need to figure out what they're going to do with him. But for now, that's where we are.
Oh, my God. And listener, I know Sabrina wanted to sum that up in one sentence. And I really love that in theory. But I do need to say that you should read that. You should read the book, period.
I think the book.
If you can overcome the triggers, if you have space for it.
Yeah, but yeah.
We get to watch them having this meeting with Boraku where they have to sort of paint him into a rhetorical corner until he finally shows his true colors. Literally on his brow, but also in his words and deeds. And then that's why they get to strip him of his title, because technically everything he did, all of the rape, all of the abuse, all of everything was completely legal because they made sure they were not fully fledged Varaxian citizens. That's why they kept them at that status. So anyway, he's also introduced the idea that there's like a rock people, and those rock people are having a really hard time having babies.
Yes.
And so he's like, I know that they would trade everything, like a billion, trillion, million times dollars.
There are people of pirates, and I'm going to tell you right now, I want that man's book.
I hear you. I'm with you. Yeah. But like, they want the coordinates to that moon so that they can find breeding partners, essentially.
Essentially, yeah. So it's time for the coronation, and she rolls up as she's born, fully naked.
Did you love this ceremony?
Yes, it was
beautiful. I fucking loved this ceremony.
Because she rolls up fully nude and kneels at his feet, and then she... Okay, so... I nearly stagger as beautifully accented high Varaxian ripples elegantly from her lips. Because, to be clear, listener, she is speaking the words in Varaxian instead of through the translator. Because she realized when he walked out after she was silent, she was going to have to do a grovel.
And a grand gesture at a minimum. I don't think she has to grovel. She doesn't grovel. But she does a grand gesture to make sure he knows that she wants him for him. So this is part of her grand gesture.
Raku, I present myself to you. I present myself to the Varaxian people as your Zaveri mate, she says, and she does not use her translator. She speaks to me in my own tongue. I feel like I've been pricked with a Droharian-tipped needle. It electrifies my skin softly while a much stronger dose bursts beneath my plates in the center of my breast. I clear my throat when I speak, for it is full of this emotion I've never felt before. Thus, I do not know how to overcome it. It takes nearly all of my control to tamp the colors to my ridges and whatever control is left into not running her on the sands in front of all my people. You are the Zana to my Zaneru, and I am honored by you. Rise, my Zaveri mate, and take your place as Raku Kana to your people. I have full body goosebumps right now.
And then it gets even more meaningful because she starts naked. But after he says, like, rise as my Raku Kana, he takes off all of his robes and puts it on her signify that everything that's his is now hers.
His protection.
Yes.
His safety.
All of it. And so he ends the ceremony fully nude. And like, that was really hot. The way that Elizabeth Stevens manages to weave
everything.
Well, and weave extreme equality into every single facet of the narrative, basically from a little bit before on, is goddamn gorgeous. You know, absolutely gorgeous.
And she picks up all of these threads that she's been weaving this entire time. We are slowly, over the course of, at this point, like 150 pages, learning about this culture, learning about him, learning about the people, learning about her, learning about her people, because it's not a typical human civilization, and putting it all together in a way that is just, it's really gorgeous.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to describe it, right? Other than it's fucking gorgeous.
Yeah. So, okay. The past 3 days have been absolute hell for him too, but mm-hmm. he wanted to make sure that she had her privacy and her space and all of that. And so all he has gotten is like a very brief overview of her schedule. And he has noticed that maybe perhaps she has been spending quite a bit of time with a fellow inventor who engineers shit in alien times. And wow, she sees him a lot. And
it means hers.
His very mate like might be in love with someone else and like might have taken his Zora wherever she wanted it.
Ding dong.
It's so cute.
Dong.
And so then as they're headed back to their like throne so that all of their people can dance and sing and get drunk and do all the shit around them and they sit on their thrones.
I cried at this scene like a fucking baby.
Yeah, Mel. Same. I loved it.
Okay.
So they're walking past this inventor engineer dude and he hands her something that's like wrapped in whatever. And she's like, oh, thank you so much. And it takes every single ounce of his self-control not to be like, another person is giving my mate something. And they spent so much time together. And where has his Zora been? And all the business. So then they get onto their thrones and they sit down. And she's like, I have a gift for you. And he says, gift, I do not understand this gift idea. That doesn't translate. So she explains that it's just something that is nice that she wants to give to him as a sign of affection and gratitude and all the stuff.
Like a tithe? You don't tithe me.
Right.
You are my queen. Right. And she's like, no, it's a gift. Okay. But before they can even open the gift, Sphera's here.
Yeah.
He had Krixox bring Sphera from Koth.
Huh.
To come visit. It's beautiful. And she's overwhelmed and just so fucking happy. Mm-hmm. And then we get a little bit more. There's no way that Krixox, and which we know for a fact by the end of the book, that Krixox and it's book four.
They're book four.
Who's book three?
Some bitch I don't recognize. I don't know.
Who's the...
I'm sure we meet
the dude? Oh, okay, cool.
I'm sure meet them the next book or whatever. You know what I mean?
Probably. But she's here and she's so fucking happy. And then she does give him that gift. And that gift
she made with her hands.
She made with her own hands. And he's such a fucking weirdo about it too, though. Because he's like, where did this gift come from? Why did he give it to you? And she's like, well, I needed him to hold it because I showed up naked, bro.
I had no pockets. Okay.
I had one pocket. And guess what goes in that pocket?
Your Zora. Yeah.
Your Zora. It's a Zora pocket, sir.
And it's a very exclusive space. Okay. Like there is one person on the VIP list.
Invite only.
Yeah.
But the gift, she made a functional solar system of Varaxia, mm-hmm. like the Varaxian Federation, basically. And
it's like solar powered and shit.
Yeah.
And it rotates and shit.
And it's got some of that fancy gold water in it that lights it up. It's like beautiful. And he is so fucking overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. And get this, I have a quote for you,
please.
Mel.
Please.
Because his ridges, by the way, I think the more that I look at these quotes, you're right. It's not a little horny crown. It is the little owl eyebrows. But anyway.
Okay.
His ridges light up like a fucking fireworks show. And he cannot hide. And he's like behind her and like pulls her up onto his lap. And he's like.
And he's putting
in her arms.
And he's putting his head into her chest. And she like tries to lift him back up to be like, what's going on? And he's like, mm-hmm. I can't show them. My people can't see me like this. Because he spends so much of his time just tamping down his emotions so that his ridges show nothing.
Mm-hmm. And she says, so then she lifts up her arms so that her fur can cover him. And she tells him, don't worry, they can't see you here. I'll protect you. He barks out a shout as ripples cross the muscles in his back. I fold my arms around him as he slides his own arms beneath my covering and wrenches me to him. Mm. His lips meet my chest in the space just above my heart, and he kisses me there, warm and wet and rough. I comb my fingers through his hair, and for what feels like the most beautiful eternity, we just hold each other while the fires crackle and the people dance around us. It's in that moment that I feel it with finality. The Zana in my stomach and chest and head and heart is no longer tormented. The molten river is settled. There's no more delirious flood. Because like me, for maybe the first time in my life, my Zana is home.
Oh.
Oh.
Ma'am. This moment.
Elizabeth fucking Stevens.
I cannot. And I love that it's not only his forehead ridges, like he's so overcome
his whole
by this
body.
Sign of affection that, yeah, the colors are going all over his body.
Because he's like curled up in her arms. Like he has his arms in front of his chest because she is fully blocking him.
Yeah.
Because otherwise everyone would know.
It's so beautiful the way that this protection gets flipped. Because it's unthinkable to him that his Javeri mate would need to protect him. And yet.
But that's what a mate does.
Exactly. Exactly. And she gets to be that for him in this moment.
Mm-hmm. And then he starts, after he calms down, he is a petulant little baby because he finds out that she has two more presents waiting at home. And he's like, well, tell me what they are. What is they?
And also, I didn't get anything for you. And she's like, what the fuck do you call Svera? You brought her here, even though you still consider her a traitor, just because you knew it would make me happy.
And he's like, but you couldn't unwrap it. That's not a gift.
Yeah, it's so cute. It's so cute. All right, so now I think we go back to the... No, there's an explosion?
All right, so we meet the dignitaries before they can go off and go to Bone Town.
Oh my God.
She does one of my most favorite things that has ever happened in a book is she meets this dignitary, the Usa, and they're like delighted by her. Delighted.
And they're gelatinous people.
Mm-hmm. They're gelatinous see-through people. Well, it turns out the Usa are so delighted that they ask if they can do a traditional greeting with Miari. And
she's
Raku
like, yes, I would love that.
Mm-hmm. And Raku's like,
nope.
No, absolutely fucking not. Listener? Nope. A traditional Usa greeting, farewell, happy dance, sad dance, I have to pee dance. Literally everything is mating.
All of it is fucking. And so their whole party was like moving forward, like tittering, being like, whoa,
oh my God, I'm so excited. Can't wait to stick it in the hybrid.
It's fantastic. Yeah.
And then we meet on page, the dignitary from the people that
the pirate
are
people
desperate for breeders, essentially.
The pirate rock people. And they've got like apparently two real girthy dicks that are made of stone like substances.
His dick has to be better than what's described elsewhere.
Right?
It like,
has
that's
to be
not,
better.
We'll see.
It just seems
he's
not great.
He's got to have a book, right?
I feel like, yeah. You know,
he has to. But anyway, and basically I'm going to try again to boil us down into one sentence.
And let's see if I stand for it.
So he makes some inappropriate comments about the Raku Kana.
Yeah.
And Zoran has a big fucking issue with it. Mm. And they get in a tussle and a fight. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, you get the fuck off my planet. And he's like, well, it's going to take me a little time to recharge my ship.
Mm.
And then
Zoran's like, we're leaving now. Goodbye.
Do you have anything else to add?
That's it. Wow. Great job,
wow,
Sabrina.
Okay.
Great job.
So then we go back. I was fully expecting you to have like a couple of comments.
No, great job, Melody, too, I think.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I think that really you deserve more praise than that. So they do go back. That like they finish up with the dignitaries, all of the rest of them. We don't see the rest of them because they're all boring, apparently, and don't say hi by fucking or want to steal the queen. He forgets about his third gift because he's so delighted by his second gift, which is she took that breeding belt, which, by the way, we did not mention this, but the breeding belt was made with deeply illegal illegal stuff. Like, he had to go to a black market to
get all the shit. It's like unicorn hair or something, you know?
He full on Voldemort's this fucking breeding belt. Breeding harness. Mm-hmm. And then she has turned it into, like, lingerie. And he goes into a rutting fever. And yeah. Boy, howdy, it is fucking pound town.
Yeah. Yeah.
She also gives him a blowjob and spits on his dick. And I was so happy about it.
Same. And like, they're both like a little bit surprised by her doing that.
Especially because Varaxian women don't touch the dick.
At all.
Period.
That's not how they mate at all. It's just, no, it's just breeding
belt. Breeding harness or nothing.
Yeah. And so he is like, wow, I'm so excited about all this amazing sex we're having. I do, however, want a bunch of tiny Rakus. And so I am going to need to get her into that breeding position somehow at some point. I don't know if the breeding harness is going to work or what, but like, we're going to get into that. We got to get into that conception position.
And then they do, in fact, fuck for a solid like 3 days.
Yeah. Like, and I mean, the very as end, they should.
At the very end, Miari thinks to herself, at some point, I wonder if it is possible to die from too much happiness, even one drop too much, or if it is possible to live in that drop for the rest of eternity.
Oh.
I'd like to try, regardless of outcome.
Ooh.
Oh, I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, then we're going to skim the hell out of this. There's important stuff that happens, but we're going to skim the hell out of this chapter.
But it's mostly intrigue.
It's political intrigue.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. It was super interesting. But basically, it's a big old talk that basically boils down to the humans are going to give the opportunity, are going to be given the opportunity to be on other planets and form healthy, consensual, happy relationships with aliens and bear their children. Sveri is going to be Miari's advisor.
And humanly. Liaison.
Mm-hmm. And then guess what? Paxil, our old Baraku friend, who is no longer Baraku, escapes.
Escapes. Goodbye.
Big boom. Done.
Yeah. And Crixox is very obviously in love with Sveri, but doesn't know it and won't admit it. And oh all God, he keeps hates doing human. Is being like, well, no, she should always live with me. I should always be her sole protector, period, the end. And I will take no questions at this time.
And I fucking love him.
He's ridiculous. He's ridiculous. And so there's a big explosion as they're in this meeting trying to figure out what to do about all the business. And the Raku sends Sveri and Miari back to his house with Crixox, being like, that is my biggest, baddest, scariest guy. And he's going to protect them along with all of the other, like, you know, smaller soldiers, lesser soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then he's supposed to go after Boraku or the Pirate King.
That is how he is referred to in my notes as well.
That is correct. Yeah.
There is no fucking way I was going to pronounce that name without lots of practice. And I did not have a lot of practice before this episode.
No. So back at the, you know, house, Miri has already shown Sveri that she made like upgraded hollow boys that can change into any person if you stick their hair into it. And so when they finally get overrun by these Pirate King boys, Sveri puts a hollow on both of them, switching their identities because she doesn't want, she's trying to protect the Raku Kana from being kidnapped.
But then because Miri can't let Sveri go alone, they pull a whole ass Scooby-Doo villain bitch.
Yeah.
And both end up getting taken by these pirate boys.
Right.
This is when we find out after they take them that Miari is pregnant. We find out that she is preggers, even without the breeding harness.
Because
guess what? It's almost like humans are wildly fertile compared to the rest of the alien galaxy at large.
Indeed.
In every fucking book.
Yep.
And I love it. I love it.
I love it so much.
But anyway, a lot of shit happens. This is like the action scene. Sveri gets hit in the face and she's bleeding all over the place. Miari's pregnant and gets stuck underneath a fucking table. Yeah. One of the bad dudes is in a rut rage or some kind of shit like that. And he is
the
fucking
other guys are trying to protect them, the women.
Yeah, the other pirate boys are trying to protect them.
Uh-huh. Zoran comes in and
Krixox.
Oh yeah, you're right.
First, he shows up and he is not looking good. He is not looking hot. This boy is at one hit point barely.
He's been beat to fuck.
Yeah, and he immediately goes to Sphera and grabs her, and she's not covered anymore. She's completely naked.
Yeah.
And he gets naked to cover her up and make sure her hair is covered and her body is covered.
The way that is important to her.
Oh my God, when he did that, like, the ship was already sailed, but now it's an armada.
It is an
armada.
I know. Yeah.
But anyway.
And then Zoran comes in and kills whoever's left.
My God. Zoran is a mad puppy.
Yeah.
He's an angry little puppy just growling and ripping all that shit apart.
Absolutely. And then he finds out that she's pregnant and he is like over the moon happy about it.
Mm-hmm. Then they do have really questionable, she still is definitely broken, sex.
Oh, yeah.
In the medical bed. And I had...
Didn't hate it.
I just whimsied real hard. Yeah. And then they're together forever and it's beautiful. His final present to her, though. Mm-hmm. His one present for her. He wrapped an entire tree in wrapping paper.
Mm-hmm.
Because he built her a lab.
Yeah.
Oh, it's beautiful.
It's the best.
And then he's like, she's just so happy. And she's like, let me show you how happy and grateful I am. And he says, on one condition, you call me Zoran.
Yeah.
The end, listener.
The end. And now, book two, Kiki's going to come out of that goop.
And she's going to be so fucking mad. She's going to be big mad. Oh
that
my gosh, she's going to be so mad.
Is going to be big mad. And Varaku has an uphill battle ahead of him. Yikes.
No shit.
Yikes.
All right. That was Taken to Varaxia.
Yeah.
Look at us.
Oh my God.
See the time that
I do
is
see
now?
The time. It's a sexy time. That's what mm-hmm. that is. And I'm going to read basically the rest of these books. So you might see that come up on Patreon. I don't know.
Yeah, I will probably also be continuing to read these.
Yeah.
We'll see. It depends on, I'll tell you in my lady love.
Well, Sabrina, I have a lady love.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I have unlocked a new superpower, I think.
Okay. I unlocked one last week. Now it's your turn.
Nice.
What's yours?
Exactly. Mine is very simple. Anybody can do it. It is homemade pizza crust. Is what I unlocked. And then homemade pizza crust, if you make too much, boy, does it double as the base for cinnamon rolls the next morning.
What?
Yeah. Delicious cinnamon rolls.
Out of pizza dough?
That I made, yeah, with my hands and my determination. And also some instant yeast.
So, like, I didn't know that I was talking to a kitchen goddess.
Neither did I.
Okay, I'm just made that. It's not a joke, to be clear.
I know.
I am legitimately awestruck right now.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm big excited about these developments. And I think that my family is going to be as well.
Oh my God. Can we make pizza together and then cinnamon rolls sometime?
I would love that. That's
like,
so
even just
that was
virtually
part of girls
like
weekend.
We can.
Oh, yeah.
We can just do that as a thing.
Hell yeah. I would love that.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, I'll love that. So I'll link the recipe I used in the show notes.
I am wildly impressed.
Thank you.
Ooh. I might have to try this now because like I really want to start cooking a lot more from scratch.
Hmm.
Just because like with the stomach thing that I had recently, that issue, I'm a little gun shy about...
Processed foods.
Yeah. And so I love the idea of that because pizza is like my favorite easy thing to make.
Yes.
Because like it's just so easy. Like, and I just use like the store-bought crust, or actually that's not true. I use pita breads.
Oh, I like that.
And then I usually put pesto, salami, mozzarella, and then capers.
Yum.
And that's my go-to, I don't feel like cooking meal.
Mm-hmm.
that is not hot Cheetos and cream cheese. I don't know that that counts as a meal. So I love this.
What's your lady love?
I love that. My lady love is a little author named Emma Hamm. So I found this author from their book Whispers of the Deep.
Yeah.
Which I talked about on Patreon, and it's probably my favorite book that I've read this year. For whatever reason, I had not really gone and looked at her back catalog like I usually do. I did know that the next book was going to be coming out, you know, in October or September or something like that. And I was like, why have I done this to myself? God, why? It was incredible. I fucking loved that book. I loved everything about it. It was like the perfect level of angsty and kind of dark, but also just gritty. I fucking love a gritty dystopian sci-fi kind of shit.
Yeah.
And it was perfect. And then last week, I decided that I wanted to follow this author on Fantastic Fiction, where I track author back catalogs, because I had never heard of this author before. So I mistakenly assumed that she did not have a lot of fucking books. My God, this fucking author is so fucking prolific. I just started a series by them. I may be going down a rabbit hole. I also maybe just realized today on my lunch break that this isn't a standalone series. This is a 5-book series about one couple, I think. I know for a fact that the first 2 books at the very least, but I just decided I don't want to know.
How the turntables.
I forgot how much I loved a romanticy style thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I think that's it, as I only like it. When it's like romanticy style. You know what I mean? Where it's like a
if it's fantasy or monster or that kind of thing.
I'm not even that into it with monsters. Really? Specifically fantasy.
Okay.
But who knows? Maybe that's going to change. Apparently I'm growing or some shit. But the fucking book that I started is called Of Goblins and Gold. Ooh. It is also like 280 pages and I am about 20% in, and I started it last night at like 11:30 p.m.
Wow.
I've only read it for like 10 minutes on my lunch break, and the minute we get off here, I'm going to go read this.
I support this.
And it's been a while since I felt that way about a book, especially like a book series, and so like I'm very excited.
Yay!
I'm very excited. So my lady love is Emma Hamm.
All right.
Shout out Emma Hamm if you want to. I have questions for you.
And I think that, you know, my Zub lady love is going to be Theodora Taylor, because.
Yeah.
Wow.
I support that.
That's my rabbit hole.
My Zub lady love is authors with a hell of a back catalog. So it's kind of Theodora Taylor, too.
Hell yeah.
We have a theme this episode again.
Hell yeah.
Alrighty.
All right.
So, listener, keep being a badass and love yourself as much as you love miniature solar systems made by your fated mate, the love of your life.
Golly. Yeah. Love yourself as much as you love starting a ceremony with one partner naked and ending with the other partner naked for symbolism.
Yeah. And love yourself as much as you love pizza cinnamon rolls.
Yeah. And love yourself as much as you love a fated mate fucking light show that is only for you, private audience.
When they're vulnerable emotionally.
Yeah. And you have to
protect them.
You have to ensconce them in your protection and your furs. Yeah.
You must embrace them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Bye.
All right. Bye.
Heaving Bosoms is produced by us, Melody Carlisle and Sabrina Bradley. Editing is done by Melody Carlisle.
Our theme music is by the incredible singer-songwriter Brittany Fonts, and our art is by ultra-talented author Kate Pryor. If you like our show, remember to follow us on your favorite podcast app, rate us 5 stars, leave a nice review, and of course, tell all your friends about us, even if they don't read romance.
If you want to get in touch, you can email us at heavingbosomspodcast@gmail.com. If you want more of us, visit patreon.com/heavingbosomspodcast. You can also find us on Instagram at Heaving Bosoms, on TikTok at Heaving_Bosoms, and in our Facebook group, the Heaving Bosoms Geriatric Friendship Cult.
Head over to our website to sign up for our newsletter, get our Reading Embrace printable, and check out my audiobooks at heavingbosoms.com. All right, we'll be back next week with more Swoons and Snark. See you then.